You are Locked On AFL, your daily AFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On AFL. I'm your host, Kane Pittman.
Particularly with a pathetic effort from Pitt. I mean, it was the most disgraceful display I've ever seen from a big film. That's pretty hard on an individual, but he's going to have to live with that.
And alongside me, as always, is Josh Lloyd.
Lloyd.
Yes, Kane, we're back. The round isn't completely over. Got one game on tonight, but it's always a good show on Monday, especially when your team beats Essendon.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do in a few weeks' time. It's going to be, again, I don't think there's a better time actually to have a daily AFL podcast when there's going to be games every single night. But I did always forget that we have the Saints and the Crows tonight, so we'll touch on that a little bit later. But yeah, the Doggies again, I mean, they've well and truly got the wood over the Bombers. But overall, this was by far, I think, the best quality weekend of footy that we've had. I think some really good weather in Queensland contributed to that. It was perfect conditions for footy, and I think this is going to be the benefit of the teams going north, because I do think at times we've seen a lot of games early on in Victoria and some of these other night games in Queensland where it's really slippery, it's really wet. Now maybe players are a few weeks in, they're starting to feel more comfortable, but I love the weekend of footy.
Yeah, there was good games, but also good standard of games as well. So even the games that were blowouts, like the Bulldogs and Essendon game, or even like Gold Coast and Sydney wasn't as much of a blowout, but there were still pretty high quality games. Richmond, North Melbourne, maybe not quite as much, but still some highlights in that one. But some really interesting and exciting footy, which we're going to talk about some of the other more exciting things. But on a more somber note, we've got to touch on the news about Gary Ablett and him leaving the Western Australian bubble to be with his family after his son was admitted to hospital, I believe, over the last few days with that genetic disorder that he is suffering from. Ablett maintains that he will return at some point this season. This is, of course, his final season, but we're looking probably minimum 4 weeks at this point with quarantine involved and then being here for his family. So it's a bit of a blow for the Cats. And obviously, yeah, it's bad for Ablett and his family.
Yeah, I mean, straight from a footy perspective, I mean, obviously everyone is like, yeah, do whatever you need to do. And even if he never came back, I don't think anyone at all would be, upset at him for that. And if you are, well, you're a moron. But and listen, I didn't have kids, Josh, so it's I guess easier for you to understand what that might feel like. Certainly, it's really sad. And I mean, you saw the photo when he got home, but from a footy perspective, it does hit home about the impacts of the hubs and the quarantine. And it's awesome that footy's been able to continue in WA and Queensland. And this is the steps they have to go to ensure that their state remains safe. Because, again, we live in Victoria. We know what's going on down here. But not only will he come home, still got another 14 days quarantine before he is in contact with other players, other teams. So with the fixture crunch coming up that we spoke about, yeah, I mean, this is potentially maybe 5, 6, 7 games. I mean, they don't know when he's going to come back, and clearly that's determined on the health of his son and perhaps whether, maybe Jordan and Levi would come with him to a hub. We don't know whether that's a possibility as well. But either way, significant loss for the Cats, there's no doubt, as they have a pretty extensive injury list now. I think we'll touch on that a little bit later, but starting to pile up a little bit on the Cats.
Yeah, losing Selwood, and we had Duncan and Narkle last week, and now Ablett's gone. Compounded with a loss to Collingwood and being over there in Western Australia, it is adding up for Geelong, and it's not dire straits at this point, but with the ladder being as compact as it is, a couple of losses on the trot here, and then they do find themselves in a little bit more of a scrappy type position, and that's going to make it a little bit tougher without those elite level players in the team.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because we look at it now, and 7 games have been played outside of Essendon and Melbourne, who are on 6. They have a game in hand, obviously, from the one that was postponed. But after everything that's happened, and yes, there's a huge ladder crunch going on right now, but the top 4, Collingwood and Richmond, have found their way in. And even though there's been some concern, they're both missing really key players. Richmond's another team that has a huge injury list right now, and also some personal reasons that have kept players out. Collingwood, much the same. I mean, they've been in controversy all year long. They find themselves now in 3rd position with a really, really, really healthy percentage, only 2nd to Port Adelaide in that regard. And the Tigers are just rolling again. They seem to have found their style of footy. The pressure is right up again And I do wonder whether this is the hunger from some other guys coming into the team that possibly normally wouldn't have got the chance to play. And also, with no state leagues, no VFL, you have to remember some of these guys that are coming into teams, and we're going to see a lot of this around the league as players both injured. Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of injuries, and also teams look to manage guys. You're going to see some hungry young players come in. And right across the league, we've seen some exciting young guys. Again, Waitman, your guy at the Doggies was pretty good on Friday. And I didn't get a lot of footy, but when he did, he was exciting. Frederick last night for Fremantle was awesome. Rankin, again, played another good game. So this is maybe one of the sneaky benefits of the season being this way. But as you look at the ladder, I mean, geez, it is tight. One game separating fifth, where the Cats are all the way down to Hawthorn in 14th. It's percentage and racking up these early wins, it's critical right now.
The other thing that's going to be interesting as well is it's hard to really use injuries as any sort of excuse, because you look at the teams up the top, and maybe not as much Port Adelaide and Brisbane, but Collingwood now with Dugowie out, with Sidebottom suspended, they've had their injury problems. Richmond, we know their problems. Geelong, we just talked about it. The Suns are missing Rao. The Bulldogs have got Dunkley and Norton still on the sidelines. The Bombers are without Scheel and Heppel. Yeah, so many of these teams are without. You know, the Carlton's got no Cruiser. A bunch of these teams are doing this without a lot of key movers. And that makes it all the more interesting. So when these guys eventually come back, you know, does that strengthen them? So it is a really, really intriguing season that is quite quite compressed in terms of the ladder, where teams can beat others and you don't. It's really hard. I know you said you're not doing tipping this season, but yeah, it would be a really tough thing to do, because things are all over the place. But it's also important that, again, that we don't overreact to one half or one game. And you talk about, I legitimately saw articles last week after Carlton destroyed the Bulldogs. The Bulldogs are in trouble. They really need to look at it. And now they've won 4 out of 5, and they just beat Essendon, who'd lost one game by 50 points. So I think we really need to just calm down on the reactionary takes.
Yeah, and I don't think it is going to change, though. But let me just say that. But yeah,
it won't. You're right.
I think this is the time of season where you might see a little bit of separation, though. And again, we've spoke about the percentage playing a factor. So if I look at a team like Hawthorn right now, I mentioned them, they're in 14th. They're on 12 points at the moment. So they're only 4 points out of the top eight, but they're also 20% out of the top eight. And the longer it goes, the more difficult it is to catch up that percentage. So effectively, Hawthorn, even though they're only one game out of the eight, you can essentially say they're 2 games out of the eight, and maybe 2 games plus with that awful percentage that they have. They just haven't been able to score. So the more the weeks go on, I think unless these lower teams, and I'm looking at Fremantle, Sydney, North Melbourne, begin to have some upsets, you're going to be able to cancel out teams. I do think we're starting to see somewhat settling of the top eight or top 10, let's just say that.
Yeah, it does appear that way with some of these other guys you're dropping off. You can look at a team like the Giants, who could easily make a push forward as well. St Kilda, who, you know, a couple of weeks ago was sitting in third there, all the way down in 10th now. Bit of a drop off there. Carlton unlucky over the weekend. there is some settling, I guess, of how these look, with some of the teams that we thought were good. Collingwood, the Richmond, Brisbane, you're all looking pretty powerful at the top. The Bulldogs, who struggled early, you're looking a lot more damaging. West Coast back into 7th. We talked about them as a team that could easily push into the 8. They're already there now. So it is starting to settle out a little bit, but there's always going to be those upsets. And Kane, not many mentions of the games is ruined. What's happening to our game? Didn't hear much from Kevin Bartlett this week about how disgusting watching footy is. I thought it was pretty bloody good.
No, it was great. And if we're going to talk about things that we love, we always do that on a Monday. We could probably move straight to Carlton and Port Adelaide. I think at this point, for me, it was probably the game of the season, and I did mention on Twitter halfway through the GWS Brisbane game that I thought that maybe that was going to be the game of the season. So we had a couple of really exciting games. But Carlton and Port Adelaide, I think, was a pretty good example of looking at final scores and looking at goals kicked and understanding that you can still have a really high-quality, intense, up-and-down, attacking, a really good game of footy to watch without there being a mountain of goals. 64-61, I think. Yeah, normally you would look at that and say, well, geez, that must have been a pretty dour struggle. But it wasn't. This game was up and down. I thought the back line of both teams did a fantastic job. And in the end, Carlton, you mentioned where they are in the ladder. So they've dropped out of the eight now. They had their 1 week in there. A game out of the eight. The percentage of 101 is pretty healthy. And that's by virtue of the fact that they've played so many close games. So they lost to Melbourne by 1 point. Lost to Port Adelaide by 3 points yesterday. They've beaten Geelong by 2 points and beaten Essendon by 1 point. So this is a team that understands what it feels like to be in a close game in 2020. It's unbelievable how close these games have been. And one kick either way, their season either could have been just about over, or they could be up in the top four. It's incredible. Just how close these games have been with the Blues.
I was pushing back a little bit on the Carlton's, you know, this up and coming, they're flying, they're unbelievable last week, just because, you know, let's not overreact to 1 week. But I said I want to see how they go against Port Adelaide. I want to see how they can compete, and it's not about necessarily winning or losing, but they, you know, they did sort of exactly what I wanted to do. Go, okay, they're a pretty good team. We don't know exactly where they're going to end up. The start of this game was weird. Like, Port Adelaide got out to a flyer, and then Carlton kicked four goals from four inside 50s, which is just not something that you expect, and that really kept them in the game. And you think if maybe they didn't convert those and kick one out of four, which is not, you know, not a terrible, it's not a great conversion rate, but then would they have been able to stick with it? It was just, again, and people focus so many on how many goals were kicked, what was the final score. That's not what is necessary for a really, really good game. This was an attacking game. It was free-flowing. It wasn't, yeah, it wasn't static. It was, and they only kicked nine goals each. Yes, the conversion wasn't great, 9-10, 9-7. It's not a fantastic conversion. It's also not horrendous. We've seen plenty worse than that. But the game was fun. The game was exciting. There was a lot happening. There was, you know, quick ball movement. Carlton looked super fast at times, and then Port Adelaide got the ball back in their hands and went, let's calm down a little bit. Let's try and take that advantage away. A great tactical battle. And again, as you said, the perfect example of how we can look at a game that doesn't have 20 goals kicked by either team and have it as a really, really strong contest. And of course, it doesn't hurt when you have an after-the-siren goal to win the game.
Yeah, we do need to get to Port. Before we do, I just want to talk about Sam Walsh a little bit, because I've been a little bit critical this year. He's butchered the footy. He hasn't used it well. His disposal efficiency has been well down. Now, we know he's only a second-year player, so there's no need to panic about that. But I thought yesterday, a lot more time in the forward half. He kicked two goals. He had 16 possessions, four inside 50s there. And his disposal efficiency was up at 68.8%, which I believe is a season high for him. So I thought he was fantastic. And I think maybe get him forward a little bit. He looked a little bit dangerous. He was able to get to the ball at ground level. And then, of course, I mean, he took one of the marks of the season, going back the other way as well, back with the flight. So Sam Walsh, I thought that was a huge bonus for the Blues, because when I did my top five Carlton players last week, I didn't have him in there. And one other guy that I have to mention, and that's Mackay. I mean, this guy's starting to look dangerous now. Only seven possessions yesterday, but kicked three goals. He's great on ground level. His hands are good. I'm not as convinced about Levi Casbold and Mitch McGovern, to be honest, moving forward. I don't know whether they're the guys, but when I look at Harry Mackay and I think about someone like Charlie Curnow, if he's able to get healthy, that's your two guys moving forward for a Carlton team in the next 6, 7, 8 years, that you're like, okay, we got our two guys. We're feeling pretty comfortable with where our forward line sits, with guys like Jack Martin at his feet. And even, I'll tell you what, Gibbons, you know, talk about a guy at state level that's got the job done over the last few years. He's been impressive as well. The Blues, they look competitive. This has been an extended period of competitive footy for them. This is just not something we've been able to say about them for a long, long time.
But Kane, they didn't win. The team on the top of the ladder did, and that's Port. We better give a bit of focus to them. And I don't think, who would have had money on their leading disposal getter being Peter Laddams?
Yeah, I actually, I was wondering who this was with the short blonde hair.
Yeah.
He got a lot of the footy. He didn't look very comfortable with the footy in his hands a lot of the times. I felt like he kept on getting the ball dished to him under extreme pressure, but he did pretty well. As you said, 21 touches. That's an impressive effort.
I thought he looked okay when he had the ball. Like, he definitely stands out with that hair. And I had the same thing. Who is this bloke? But I thought he looked okay out there. You played some time in the ruck. It was interesting to see. And the other guys I thought were really good. Burton was pretty good as well. Ollie Wines really was important. And this is a game where Dersmer and Rosie really didn't do too much. Kane Farrell had another massive goal. He's a real weapon on that handball from outside 50 around that area. That's like hearkening back to some of those you know, Heath Shaw type run-on handballs that you see running through there. Like, he's a real weapon from out there.
Yeah, Trent McKenzie is feeling a little bit jealous, I think, because Kane Farrell's taken over as the guy there. But up forward, I mean, this is a game. I mean, we have spent a lot of time talking about the Blues, but geez, Port Adelaide, they nearly blew this one. If Carlton had won this, it would have been unbelievable. When you think Robbie Gray missed a close shot, Charlie Dixon missed a close shot, and then Robbie Gray gave the ball off in the goal square, and they missed another one. Todd Marshall missed that one from, I don't know how he missed it, to be honest. And I thought Robbie Gray could have almost just straightened up and dribbled it through. He dished it off, and the power gave the Blues a whole bunch of opportunities. And then Robbie Gray, I mean, talk about a ridiculous finish. Like, from the boundary line, under pressure. Not quite as tight as Dom Sheed, I don't think, in the grand final. And I will say, I was watching First Crack last night, and Nick Del Cerno said that he spoke to a current AFL player and asked him how many players in the league could kick that goal. And the player said, Robbie Gray is the only one that could possibly do that. Well, that's just calmed down a little bit. I mean, it happened in the 28 minute mark of the grand final 2 years ago. That guy's still in the league. Give me a break.
Yeah, that's a wild statement. There are other, maybe there's not many that could kick it. It wasn't like he wasn't kicking it from 150 meters out, like on an angle with a hot dog in one hand. Like let's be fair, it's a strong kick. It's a really good kick. He's not the only bloke that can do it. But I do want to talk about another game that I did like, and that was Brisbane and GWS. Brisbane, we saw them in that real third quarter problem against Geelong last week. They needed to establish themselves, and they fell apart in that game. And they needed to bounce back, heading down and getting out of Queensland, heading down to, not out of Queensland, staying in New South Wales again, but taking on a team that was actually at their home ground, which they haven't done so far. Taking on GWS, it's a big win from Brisbane, and GWS, the same problems. Only 34 inside 50s to 56. This is the same thing, and we talk about it when it works. You go, shit, man, look at the efficiency. That's so good. How can you have such good 40 inside 50 efficiency? When it doesn't work, you go, why isn't the ball not going in? So it's great if it works, but if it doesn't, it's like, why are you not creating scoring chances? And that is a problem, and it has to work. You have to be able to, if you're going in so few, you have to be efficient for it to work. But in general, I feel like the numbers will outweigh the likelihood of being that efficient. And that's something they're going to have to work on, because it's been a theme almost every game. But for GWS, the talk, maybe Stephen Cornelio is going to get dropped, that seems stupid to me. I know it came from sources within the club, allegedly. It seemed ridiculous, but he bounced back with 27 disposals and had 9 clearances in this one as well. So good to see him back in form. And the Brisbane did it without huge performances from their main guy. Look, and you'll see, had 20 touches, but he wasn't at his usual level of play. I thought guys like Rayner played pretty well down forward. I thought it was just a really well-rounded performance, and they seemed, apart from a little wobble in the third quarter, to have it under control most of the day.
Yeah, I actually did later on. In under pressure, I had GWS there, but you brought it up. I mean, we've mentioned this, and I don't want to go into it too much because we spoke about it a lot, but the inside 50s, 56 to 34 in this game. And I thought at halftime this was a real battle. And when I look at the disposal winners on the day, the top four on the ground are Giants players. Cornelio had 27, Lockie Whitfield 24, Aiden Corr 21, Josh Kelly 21. And then you get to Lockie Neal with 20. So they're winning a lot of the ball. As a team, they had more disposals than the Lions, and they're minus 22 in inside 50s. You're just not going to win the game, and there has to be a point now where the Giants have to change what they're doing, because it's not working. And you talk about teams that are under the pump. They got the Tigers this week now, and the way that Richmond's playing, I don't know whether you, like I said, I don't do tips, but I don't know whether you could tip the Giants. If they lose that, they're 3-5. You got to get some supply. I actually thought Jeremy Cameron looked really dangerous, as well as Harris Andrews played in the first half, no doubt. But they've got to give those guys a chance. There was no Toby Green. I acknowledge that. But not getting the ball inside 50 is hurting them. But for Brisbane, a guy that I really liked, Hugh McCluggage. He missed a couple of games earlier in the season, but I thought his attack was fantastic. 17 disposals, 13 kicks, and only 4 handballs. I love that. And he was just really attacking across half-back and driving the ball inside 50. Young player that I highlighted earlier in the season as a guy that's almost get into that range where typically all Australian caliber players make that leap. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, he was. He's been really good. I think that when he did hurt his shoulder in that game against Geelong, it was an issue for them, because he is an elite, sub-elite level player. And that was a problem. Good to see he was able to get up and have an impact again. And I thought Hipwood did all right, presented pretty well in this game. And you talked about Andrews, that first half, he was just dominating. He was everywhere. And they just kept kicking it to him. But they did, I guess, change that up. And I don't know, if it was them changing it up, just deciding not to go inside 50 to avoid Harris Andrews. Was that their game plan? But something does need to change there with GWS. But it was good for Brisbane to get themselves back on track and get a win over a opponent that we think is a quality opponent, but it might end up not being a quality opponent when all is said and done at the end of this season. Kane. Who's under pressure for you?
The club doctors and physios, because we spoke about this. Soft tissue injuries are really starting to become a factor. I didn't see too many syndesmosis over the weekend, which is nice to see. That's been a theme over the last few weeks that we've been talking. But injuries, again, I mean, the teams that you look at, Richmond, we spoke about, Essendon, again, it just smashed in the clearances. I mean, this was a team that we spoke about was going to have some troubles with Dylan Shield, their clearance monster, out of the team. Early in that game, they were in real trouble and they weren't able to recover. I think that as the season is compressed here, we're going to see more injuries. And there's no doubt about it. The top teams, so you're looking at Brisbane, Port Adelaide, Richmond, Collingwood, they might be able to withstand it. But some of these other teams, I don't know whether they're going to be able to. And I think the bottom half of the eight is going to be basically survival of the fittest. And these doctors, physios, the management plans of the teams, managing these players through shorter weeks and not taking risks, those teams have to weigh this up right now. And I really thought about this when I jumped in on the... And we spoke about the Cats a little bit, but we jumped in the Simon Lloyd, he's a GM of football for the Cats, the press conference regarding Gary Ablett on the weekend. And they got over the Gary Ablett questions, and then they went to the player questions, and it was one after one after one. And I was like, wow, the Cats do have a lot of injuries. I didn't really think about that. But at the moment, as we don't know who's going to come back next week. They've got another week before they play Freo. But at the moment, it's Tom Stewart, Tom Atkins, Quinton Narkle, Mitch Duncan, Joel Selwood, Gary Ablett we know is out, Reece Stanley's out. Jordan Clark has gone in for surgery. Josh Jenkins is still out with a back. So that was 10 players. 10 players that would be, I don't know, they're all going to fit in the Team 22 for balance, but they'd be in the 25-26. And the Cats aren't the only team in this situation by any stretch. So when you start to talk about having 9, 10, 11 players out of your best 26, it's difficult to overcome. And when you and these injuries, particularly Joel Selwood, for instance, if he misses 3 or 4 weeks, that can be 5-6 games when they start playing these 4 rounds in 3 weeks. So really critical stretch, I would say. And the doctors and physios, they're going to be under the pump.
Yeah, there's names. You just look down the injury list. There's names everywhere. Stringer at Essendon. You've got, obviously, Howe at Collingwood that we talked about a few weeks ago. You're looking at the Dockers guys with Young and Logue out of their backline. Hogan's out as well. Joel Hamling's not there. There's Matt Rowell at Gold Coast, obviously. Callan Ward's now out 4 to 6 weeks for the Giants. Zach Williams has got a hamstring problem there. John Patton's out. Luke Brewster's out at Hawthorn. We didn't talk about him. He's got a jaw problem. There's injuries all over the shop at the moment. And managing and depth is super important to have those guys that can then step up into roles and fill that is really important. But you're right. That pressure is going to be on. To me, the pressure at the moment has to be on Reece Shaw. You know, came in last season. And he had a pretty nice run when he took over midway through and then had that big win against GWS. And it's been rough since then. I talked about this last week, I think, that they had that win against St Kilda round one, which was a little fortunate. Massive performance against GWS and then almost just obliterated in every game. They sit behind Fremantle and Sydney on the ladder at the moment, and that performance against Richmond was pretty poor. Do you think that Shaw is not going to get sacked, but do you think that there is it a player depth, a player list problem? Do you think it is or is it a coaching thing with North Melbourne?
No, I mean, it's hard to say whether it's a coaching thing. I think the big thing with the Roos, and this is what separates good teams from ordinary teams, to be blunt, is the fact that you really notice with North Melbourne when Ben Cunnington doesn't play. I was reading an article late last week, and I wish I had it up here to have the actual numbers, but he actually, in terms of when he plays, North Melbourne winning, and when he doesn't play, how little they actually manage to stay in games and win games. It's incredible. He's vital for them. And I think that there's a problem with the midfield right now and getting supply into the forward line. Todd Goldstein's having an incredible season. I mean, if they were winning games, he might be being talked about as a Brownlow contender the way that he's playing, but they're not getting the supply inside 50. Ben Brown, we know, is really struggling. They're unable to kick goals. I just don't think that, to be honest, I'm just not sure whether they had the talent to withstand any type of injury to any type of key player. I don't think they have the depth at the moment. It's disappointing, though, because, after that GWS game where they did play attacking footy, they were getting a lot off the half-back line from guys like Jasper Pittard and Jared Polak. It just hasn't come back. Pittard, in particular, was very, very quiet on the weekend against the Tigers, against an undermanned Tigers team. Like, let's be honest, that was a really, really poor loss for North Melbourne to go down by that much against a team with so many players out. I just don't think they're up to it.
Yeah, well, it doesn't help when your Zeeble goes down straight away, really. Yeah. Pittard was off his game. A guy that's really stepped up this year for them, Jai Simkin, wasn't himself. He only had 14 touches. Ben Brown is just completely lost at the moment. He is. It is a real issue where he is at. And whether that's him, whether that's the whole stress of, you know, everything that's going on in the world that's impacting, I don't know. But he is just not. I don't think that in the past you'd go in and play North Melbourne, you go, oh, geez, yeah, how are we going to stop Brown? Like, what are we going to do here? And now I don't think you really worry about it. You just go, oh well, like, he's just not impacting it. He's not getting near the ball. He's not kicking straight. He's just not doing anything to that level. Now, I don't know how much of that is coaching or that's just him completely out of it, but it's absolutely noticeable at the moment. And so they've got some real concerns. And this is a team that, yes, they kicked poorly. And you look at the final score, you know, 2-11, that's horrible. But it's because they kicked five behinds in the last quarter. Like, let's not say that they kicked themselves out of the game early. They didn't score a single point in the first quarter. They had 2-3 at halftime. And then they kicked, you know, eight behinds in the second half. But they were out of it pretty much straight away. And it was nothing to do with poor kicking, you know, dooming them to the loss. They were just they just couldn't get near it early on, and that put them down. And then, you know, kicking five behinds in the final quarter, it might have made it look a little bit nicer in the end if they had converted some of those. But let's not get confused that it was just a bad kicking at goal night.
Yeah, the problem for North Melbourne, and this is going to be moving forward, I mean, when you look at the guys they've added in the team, I mentioned Pittard and Polek over the last couple of years, but they've recruited like they're a team that's on the verge of potentially making a final. So the question will be for them, when you look at their team, their best players most weeks are still Todd Goldstein, still Sean Higgins, still Robbie Tarrant, Jack Zeeble, the guy you mentioned, obviously went down. All these guys are over 30. So the problem for North Melbourne is, who are the young guys? I really like Jai Simkin. He's had a fantastic year, as you mentioned. Trent DeMond, I thought, was one of their better players on the weekend. He's having a really good season as well. And Curtis Taylor, we know, is super young, and he's just came in the team. Kyron Hayden nearly ended his career going back with the flight in that one as well. So, I mean, they've got some young talent in there, but you can really see where they're at as a club when their best players are all above 30 and the team's not really being competitive. So, I don't know. It feels like it's going to be a bit of a rough patch ahead for the Roos, no doubt.
Yeah, and that's fine. Maybe they do need to transition out of that. Let's get acquired free agency type players, Hawthorn model, to compete, and let's start developing these guys through the draft more. Let's get, you know, put more time into Simkin and Dumont and these guys like Hayden, and pushing them into larger roles and seeing how they develop from there. Of course, you know, didn't have Taron Thomas there. He's one of those young guys as well who could have pushed in. But I think you're more, you know, not relying upon the Higginses and Cunningtons and those sort of guys as much, and trying to get these young guys in for maybe not the rest of this season, but I guess transitioning into that is probably going to be the way to go. Now, we still have one more game, Kane, tonight. It's Adelaide and St Kilda. If St Kilda doesn't win this one, we know Adelaide's been horrendous. St Kilda is sliding. As I mentioned, they're out of the eight. It's not a must-win game, but it's a must-not-lose game for St Kilda, because they need to just get the job done, because they push themselves back into that finals contention by getting the win here. They win this one, and they do push back into the eight. They should be able to get over the top here of Adelaide, but I don't know, with that capitulation last week, there's got to be some demons floating around in the head.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary one going into Adelaide as well. So you know that there's going to be some fans there. The Crows haven't been home for quite a while, so they're going to be fired up to get back home. Clearly things have spiraled out of control for Adelaide, and being away from home makes things difficult. So this is a sneaky, scary game for the Saints, particularly when you look at the last three quarters last week, as you mentioned. When I look at selection, I don't like Paddy Ryder being in the team. I thought Rowan Marshall over the last month has really consolidated his spot, not only as a full-time ruckman, but he slides forward as well. He kicks goals from time to time. I think he's been fantastic, and he's the answer. I'm just not sure of the balance with Max King, Tim Membry, and Paddy Ryder there in the forward line, because you're basically going to be asking Paddy to be a full-time forward. So I'm not sure how that plays out. Maybe he'll kick six, and I'll be very wrong when we come back to discuss this tomorrow. But it's just an interesting selection, because I thought they looked pretty settled. Hopefully that's not a quick response to last week's loss to Freo.
Yeah, Marshall's been one of the more impressive ruckmans in the league this year. So it is interesting to see if they do take him out of that ruck spot for any period of time. And how much do you want Ryder running around as a forward, getting in the way of, you know, Membry and King and even, you know, Kent down there? Are you perhaps a little big down in the forward line? It is a curious decision. Of course, for Adelaide, they are missing Rory Sloane, so that's not going to help them in terms of getting the victory here. But this is primed for Adelaide to at least be more competitive. First game back in Adelaide, you know, since the start of the season. Hopefully out of the doldrums of that Queensland hub. You know, Taylor Walker has returned as well. So hopefully they are able to at least make it more competitive. I'm sure Saints fans don't hope that they make it too competitive, but they do want to. We want them as a league to get a little bit more competitive and show a little bit more of something they can lose. That's fine. But you know, just getting a little bit more out there, making it at least with some interest for their fans to watch.
No, the absolutely only highlight Adelaide has given us this season was Riley O'Brien accidentally tweeting out his notes for Nick Natanui. Unfortunately, he didn't do it this week. Maybe the phone's working well. He didn't want to collect another phone off Rowan Marshall, but it'll be interesting to see how he goes because he actually played pretty well.
He did play
in that
well.
Game against Natanui. So he's been obviously somewhat of a positive for them. But yeah, they've been uncompetitive. It's not just the 0-6 record, it's the 53% as well. I mean, that's really, really non-competitive. They've only scored 249 points in total for the entire season, which is compared to everyone else, including a team like Melbourne, who have only played the six games as well. They're 130 points behind the Demons, who we know have been criticised for struggling to score at times. So that gives you an indication of how uncompetitive they've been. So we'll see. We'll see what happens on Monday Night Footy. It's good. I'm a fan of Monday Night Footy. I'm into it.
I'm a fan of footy on every night. Obviously, it's not going to be something we're going to get used to through the season, but we've already accepted Thursday nights. Let's accept Monday nights, and let's move on to the other days. Kane, thank you again for joining me once more here for Locked On AFL. And make sure you guys are subscribing. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple. It's a great way of helping out the show. Today, I'm going to leave you all with a shout out to Ashley McIntosh.